You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
8:06 now on this Wednesday morning, September 24th. Nice to have you back here up north. On this Wednesday morning, Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot coming up in just a sec. We're going to be talking to Earl Ingram to find out who he's been talking to on the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast that you can get through Civic Media. Check out the website for more. We'll have Melissa Baldoff in just after 8:20 with our climate check. And then at 8:35, we will be talking about health insurance, especially the Affordable Care Act, which is made affordable. Those health insurance premiums are made more affordable by premium tax credits. They are tax credits that President Trump and congressional Republicans are in the process of killing, and Democrats are trying to restore, and that could lead to a government shutdown as early as the middle of next week. So we'll talk to Kathy Hempstead, a national health policy expert with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, about the impact of those tax credits on regular Americans just looking for some affordable health insurance. Again, that's coming up less than 30 minutes from now. But right now, let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot to talk about the weather and how yesterday, Brittany, when the sun finally came out it was getting close to sunset, it was so tranquil on the water. Okay, looking out. And in fact, I'm gonna bring up the slide here for you to see. That's the view out in my backyard there for folks watching on social media. See that little point of trees out there in the center, out in the distance? Well, out there yesterday, the sun was hitting it just right, and the water was so still. And you could see a mirrored reflection of the trees on the water. It was gorgeous. I get my phone up. I zoom in a lot. I've got this beautiful picture that I'm going to be taking. Here comes a jet ski right across.
Darn it.
Just like somebody took your Etch-A-Sketch and just decided to shake it up and go, you didn't need that mirrored water there anyway, did you? No, I guess I didn't. Thanks. Thanks anyway. So, but the weather was gorgeous for it. Apparently gorgeous enough for one jet skier to be out there on the water. And how are we looking for today in terms of, you know, gorgeousness?
Gorgeousness will be on the way, I promise you. A little icky out there in spots, especially northwest this morning. A dense fog advisory in effect until 11 o'clock. But those winds are starting to pick up a little bit, so it's lifting ever so slowly, and it will reveal sunnier skies behind it, especially north. Down south, I think you're going to hang on to more cloud cover this afternoon, clearing later on in the day, but we're all going to get to abundant sunshine by tomorrow, and we're going to hold on to nothing but sunshine for the rest of the week and into the weekend as well. So some gorgeous weather with a high pressure system taking over, giving us, again, no rain in the forecast. So it will become a little bit breezy later today. We do have a beach hazard statement on Lake Michigan for Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha County. Waves are climbing up to 3 to 6 feet or so, and that lasts until tomorrow. So a little rough waters, few spotty sprinkles are possible by Lake Michigan later this afternoon and evening, and then high temperatures today hitting mid-60s to about 70 degrees, so slightly cooler before we get our warmer weather moving in tomorrow. So low to mid-70s by tomorrow afternoon. Sunny skies. We're going to hit the upper 70s for Friday and then tapping 80 degrees for a lot of us for the weekend and even into next week. So summery weather right here.
Or one could say gorgeousness is on the way.
Yay.
That'll work. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Remember, you can sign up for our daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the top banner. And I'm reminded by Ellie, our new newsletter editor, that she has a special edition of the newsletter coming out this Friday. Very fall festival focused. Oktoberfests and getting ready for Halloween and all kinds of sights. So you're looking for things to do on the weekends for a fall weekend in Wisconsin. Well, get signed up for this newsletter in time for the special edition on Friday. Again, upnorthnewswi.com. Earl Ingram's with us now from Civic Media. He's got the What's Going On podcast. I mean, such a range of topics that he covers in each installment. So head over to civicmedia.us, click on shows to learn more, and we're going to see what he's got in some of his latest editions here. Earl Ingram, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Good to chat with you. And I'm very interested in the topic that I think you're going to be bringing up here with one of your guests. Dr. Robert Craig was a guest. And it's a point that I think a lot of people miss when we're talking about the economy in this nation, jobs and manufacturing and everything else. And I mean, we are in an arc of history that I think too many people take for granted when it comes to where this country was at the end of the Second World War to, you know, where we went in terms of peaking and where we are right now. Tell us more about that conversation.
Well, you know, at 71 years old, I lived during those 60s, early 50s. I was born in 1954, and so the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, basically the sweet spot in my life, and I think in this nation, as the middle class, strong middle class that built suburbs and all sorts of other things and gave everybody, regardless of whether they had a college degree or not, an opportunity to live the American dream, really was kind of an illusion. And so we keep hearing people talk about getting back to a time that was a very short period of time in the history of this nation. That was during the late 1950s, 60s, and 70s, where industry was king and America was able to build everything that she needed. We didn't need any other nation. We only make up 4% of the global population, yet we produced everything that we needed inside of our borders. And so when you look at it from that perspective, great jobs and opportunities were available to people who couldn't read and write. It was the lifeblood of Black people who came here from the South seeking opportunities. They could come here, and many people couldn't read or write, but they were given opportunities to live middle-class lifestyles predicated on all of the industry that was going on in this country. And so the conversation I had with my good friend Dr. Craig centered around the fact that, you know, to hear people say that we're going to get back to that, I don't think they understand the history, the historical facts, and how we were able to do those things at that period of time.
Yeah. Now, look, this is not taking away from all the things that America and Americans could do during that period. But again, you got to keep in mind, much of the rest of the world was in ruins from a global war. And we were it for the economic, for the industrial engine for the longest time. And that's fine. We not only built everything, we built a middle class, the likes of which did not exist previously in human history. But far too many people took that for granted and forgot that, you know, the rest of the world was going to build up its infrastructure again, its manufacturing, and that, you know, U.S. companies would you know, outsource their jobs and things like that. And that, again, this is kind of a natural arc. And so when people say, oh, yeah, we're going to get back to those glory days. Well, no, not unless you're going to create all the rubble of a world war. So now, Earl, less people think it's just a couple of old men rocking on the porch here grousing that the good old days ain't coming back. We're just setting the perspective for people so that when you look forward, you know, you're not essentially blowing smoke and romanticizing what it is we're going to get back to. We can make things better, but let's put our expectations in the here and now and not some era in the 50s and 60s that ain't coming back.
Well, so what predicated, and you're absolutely correct, what predicated the conversation that I had with Dr. Craig was in Milwaukee last week. A family of six, children ages 9 to 2 months, were found living in a storage facility. 1:30 in the morning, they heard whimpers coming from this storage facility. The police came, were able to somehow get into the storage facility and noticed six children living in a facility with no lights, you know, no bathroom, no heat. And so the family, mother and father, were just outside in a car. They couldn't afford to find any place to live. And if you look at the realities of what people are faced with in this nation, for every 100 people looking for a place to rent, there's only 35 available. So the impacts of what has happened in this nation and what continues to happen are monumental. And I think that so many people aren't aware of the statistics that go along with what is taking place in this nation. If they did, if they really knew, they'd realize we're in a crisis that warrants political leaders from both sides of the spectrum to put aside certain things and not give major tax breaks to people who are always as wealthy as they are, while a large segment of this population is struggling.
And that is so on point, because people are going to want to right away just point fingers at that at those parents. And I'm not taking anything away from that, but the conditions that led people to that point. Why do we have conditions like this in the wealthiest nation ever, with wealth that is so concentrated in people who could not care less about those who are struggling, to the point where they feel the need to live in cars and in storage sheds? And this is a time right now in this history of our country to figure out how do we fix that? How do we fix that inequality and still, well, I won't say still keep America strong. It'll frankly make America stronger if we address that wealth gap that we have in this country. And I'm sure Dr. Craig agrees with that.
Well, you know, Pat, I would say this. The real inherent danger in where we are is that since 2023, the number of homeless people rose 18% since 2023 in 2 years. And so it from 670,000 to 780, those are the numbers that they can count, not counting the ones that we know aren't being counted. And so at that rate and where our economy is headed, those numbers are going to get even worse. And I maintain that family was not alone in living in those kinds of conditions. They are everywhere. And we've got to make an effort. We've got to make an effort to count them. They're American citizens, and they deserve a better opportunity in life.
Well, especially, yeah, if we're going to live any kind of a creed of a Judeo-Christian nation, for some folks, maybe live up to more of those parts of Scripture as well. It's the kind of thing that Robert Kennedy saw and tried to call attention to and tried to address. And instead, we're watching Robert Kennedy Jr. do things that are just not going to help any of these folks at all. Learn more about this by catching Earl Ingram on the What's Going On podcast. Head over to civicmedia.us. Click on shows and look at all the episodes that Earl has been pushing out for us. A great public service for us all. Earl, thanks so much. Always appreciate the visit. Hope you have a great day.
You as well.
All right. Still ahead, we're going to have our climate check, and we're going to be talking about healthcare, the health insurance premium assistance that's provided to make healthcare more affordable, and why politicians are trying to kill it and potentially lead to a government shutdown next week. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, we've got you covered from a healthcare standpoint over at Up North News. Not only do we have Dr. Kristen Lyerly on twice a week, an OBGYN, but we have a new video series with pediatrician Dr. Kelly Snooks called Raising Wisconsin. Look for that on the Up North News Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok feeds. Again, Raising Wisconsin with Dr. Kelly Snooks. All right, welcome to our climate check for this week. And yes, we will get to the things the President of the United States had to say at the United Nations yesterday and what it is he said about climate change. And it's the kind of things you would expect from a guy who, if he had it his way, you'd have a coal-operated electric toothbrush. So we'll get around to it. But, you know, climate change is real, and it is having real impact on our everyday lives, like quite literally our personal lives. And Melissa Baldoff is going to kick off that segment this week for us. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing all right. After being sick and traveling, I am, you know, finally back in the land of the living.
Yes. Well, and a lot of people, you know, there's concerns. I got my COVID shot last week and my flu shot, and there's all kinds of other things out there, not the least of which is ragweed and all the other fall allergies that are out there. And frankly, a changing climate has an impact on that as well. Tell us more.
Yeah. So this was, you know, timely information for me to learn, you know, with, you know, having a cold and then ended up with, you know, this cough and sniffle that lingers, even though I'm feeling better. And lo and behold, I read a story about how climate change is supercharging fall allergies. The main cause, like you said, is ragweed. And as our climate gets warmer, those ragweed plants are living longer and they are producing pollen later into the fall. So that is something that's going to be triggering those allergies, make them last longer, you know, cause the sneezing, the sniffles, your, you know, eyes itchy and watery, get that cough lingering. And, you know, that's just something, another impact of climate change and of that worsening climate crisis that we've got. You know, there are big ways, there are small ways. This is one of those ways that's maybe small for a lot of people. But it's a real impact.
But it counts because, again, when things are drier and when your drier seasons last longer, for example, you know, here in the Midwest, the pollen season, according to an article from Yale Climate Connections, the pollen season is now lasting a month longer than it did in 1970. So in five decades, pollen season is now a month longer. We talked about somewhat related to this of all the many ways that a changing climate impacts us. Expect more like Lyme's disease and things from ticks, because again, with the dry season lasting longer, their season is longer, and it makes it a wider window for you to, you know, pick up something that may be a tick-borne illness is what, you know, the case. And as the article notes, by having more carbon dioxide in the air, it just allows these ragweed plants to grow bigger and create more pollen. And, you know, look, you can shut the windows. You can use an air filter, and there's certainly medicine out there, but it's simply worth noting that, you know, when people go like the president yesterday talking about it being some kind of a big con job, he's just not living in the real world, Melissa.
Exactly. And the irony shouldn't be lost on anyone that the convicted felon president, the biggest scammer and con we've ever seen, would call anything a scam or a con job. But here we are with Donald Trump, you know, insulting our allies, you know, at the UN, embarrassing our country once more. And this is just one of the many ways as he is mocking our allies for investing in green energy and committing to sustainability. And he's telling them, this is all a scam. Your country's going to fail if you keep doing this. You know, all of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people. I mean, this is just...
This guy calling scientists stupid, right? That's rich.
Right.
you know? So we've got that. He gets the attention for saying these ridiculous things, none of which is based in science or fact or reality, whatever the case may be. So the folks that do understand this, do have these conversations, do look for solutions, but they're also gathering. And in this case, this weekend, there'll be a climate march that you wanted to bring up.
I did. Yes. So this weekend on Sunday, there will be the Wisconsin Climate March in Madison. So anyone who's in the area who's able to get there should absolutely join meeting starting at noon on the Library Mall. And then, you know, at 1 o'clock, starting the march down State Street to the Capitol Square. After that, there will be, you know, some speakers and other folks to keep the celebration and conversation going. But, you know, this is really about different people and organizations, and Forward Together Wisconsin that I work with, along with Mandela Barnes, is one of the sponsors here. But this is about people coming together to send a message that climate can't wait. And this is going to be a way to just demonstrate the very broad public support for renewable energy and, you know, that opposition to dirty fossil fuels. So this is just one way to, you know, bring community together and educate the public and really show a strong show of force that there is community and like-minded folks who are going to be advocating and know that we can't wait.
Right, because there's by and large Republicans both in Madison and in Washington D.C. who would love to think that this all just kind of fades away and people just get used to, you know, repealing all of these things that create a whole new generation of clean energy jobs. So by having events like this, it reminds these politicians they are being watched, they are expected to be moving forward and not taking us back. And so again, you can head to WisconsinClimateMarch.org to learn more. Melissa Baldoff has our climate check each week. Thank you, Melissa, very much. I appreciate it. Hope you have a great day. Glad you're feeling better.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Coming up next, we will talk about health insurance policies, health insurance tax credits to make those policies more affordable with a national expert right after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, just a reminder, I sit here from 6 until 9 a.m. weekday mornings. You don't have to. We'd love to have you along for the full 3 hours, 5 days a week. If you can't, well, all the more reason to pod this little program. Head over to Spotify and follow our show, or do so at Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And that way you never miss a guest. You never miss an update. You never miss a quip. And that includes topics like healthcare. And we're going to discuss that right now with our guest, Catherine Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We're going to talk about, you always hear us talking about, you know, the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare kind of at this very overarching umbrella of healthcare, et cetera. We're going to get into kind of the nitty gritty of it. What is it that makes it more affordable? And why is that a bit of a political football lately as we talk about, you know, the federal budget and things like that? Catherine Hempstead, good morning. Nice to have you here again.
Hi, Pat. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you. And for telling us more, we're going to get into specifically these healthcare tax credits. It's tax credits that really kind of put the affordable in the Affordable Care Act. So why don't we kind of go back to when the earth cooled here and explain how these tax credits, how these subsidies, how they are essentially are the foundation of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. That's a great question. The Affordable Care Act was designed to help fill a really important gap in our healthcare system, which was to provide affordable coverage to people who didn't get an offer from their employer, weren't old enough for Medicare, didn't have low enough income for Medicaid. So they sort of updated, improved, re-regulated the individual market and required insurers to accept everyone, no underwriting for medical conditions, rating only for age. And the, you know, to make that actually work for people, to make the coverage be affordable, they also included this set of tax credits that were based on income. And it, you know, it was an amazing accomplishment and filled a really important gap, but there was definitely the perception that the tax credits were not sufficient to make coverage as affordable as people wanted. So for example, when you reached 400% of the poverty level, which is only about $62,000 annual income for a person, so it's you know, not a very high income, you actually would hit what people call the subsidy cliff. You wouldn't get any tax credit at all. So coverage was really unaffordable for people at that income level and over. And for people with really low income, there was also the perception that the tax credits were not really sufficient, and a lot of people were not taking the offer of coverage. So in 2021, they enhanced the tax credits. They made them more generous, and they also eliminated that subsidy cliff and just had a cap of a percent of income that you would be required to spend on premiums, so that that kind of smoothed that top part of the income distribution and made the coverage a lot more affordable for people at the lower end of the income distribution. And as a result, in every state in the country, enrollment really soared. Like, for example, in Wisconsin, you went from close to 200,000 people in 2020 to about 313,000 in 2025. So that's like a 50% bump up in your enrollment in the Affordable Care Act marketplace. And those kinds of results were seen all over the country, and enrollment in the marketplace soared to like 24 million. But the reason I'm on the show today and the reason we're talking about it is that those enhanced credits are set to expire at the end of this year, unless Congress takes action. And, you know, as you probably know, open enrollment is going to start soon for the 2026 plan year. And that plan year is going to reflect the end of those tax credits unless something happens.
So you had those expiring. And then to add insult to injury, you had the massive cuts to Medicaid and other things that made life more affordable for Americans in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. And now it comes time to pass a new federal budget for the new fiscal year. Republicans most likely need Democratic votes in order to pass that. And Democrats are saying, well, in return for our vote, here are some things that we would like to see restored or extended. And so when you look at what they're talking about, I don't know if I should ask best case scenario or the most realistic good scenario that could happen between now and next week that would be beneficial to most Americans in keeping their health care affordable. Is it just focusing on those enhanced tax credits and restoring those?
I think that's the most feasible thing that's on the table right now. You did mention some other like looming threats to coverage that are going to impact people in the Medicaid program, you know, work requirements and some really important changes that affect how states are able to finance the program and pay providers. And there are, you know, lots and lots of concerns about what those things are going to do to coverage. And in fact, you know, CBO is estimated kind of all in, maybe 15 million Americans are going to become uninsured over the next 10 years, which is something like a 50% increase in the size of the uninsured population. So it's a massive assault on health insurance coverage, you know, when you look at all the pieces. But I think the thing that is, you know, closest to really, you know, hitting the road and being enacted is this situation with the enhanced premium tax credits. And that's what people are trying to incorporate into you know, budget discussions in Congress. And certainly there have been talks about a permanent extension. There have been talks about a one-year extension. There have been talks about a two-year extension. I mean, right now, unfortunately, the parties are not talking to each other at all, it seems. At least that's what the public face of it is. So it's very, very difficult to, you know, suss out what might be happening.
Our guest is Catherine Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we're talking about the enhanced tax credits that helped folks afford health insurance through the Affordable Care Act and them expiring or potentially being extended. And I like the point that you made that There's talk about making them permanent or maybe for another year or two. Obviously, what was approved in 2021 is expiring now. Why was it set up that way? Because, like in all things, politics is the art of the possible. And there were plenty of people in 2021 who figured that by 2025, they would see how many more people are being helped by those enhanced tax credits, how much more affordable health insurance has become for more Americans, and that they would then see that and want to make it permanent. Obviously, that's not what we're seeing proposed by the Trump administration or by congressional Republicans. But Catherine, there's no shortage of either anecdotes or mentions in news stories that there are individual Republican members of Congress who have indicated they would be open to extending or maybe even making permanent the enhanced tax credits because they understand the help. They also understand the harm going into an election year of saying that these credits were allowed to expire. But I'm wondering if you get the same sense that there are more than zero, you know, individual Republicans in Congress who might be amenable to extending these healthcare tax credits and avoiding a shutdown next year.
I think that's definitely right. And there have been a number of individual members who have said they're open to talking about it. There's been some proposals from Republicans, you know, of maybe a 1 or a 2 year extension. So I think you're right. And the truth is that states that voted Republican are really, in general, as a rule, have disproportionately higher use of the ACA marketplace, especially some of the states that haven't expanded Medicaid, which I know is partially true in Wisconsin, but states like Texas and Florida are really dependent on the marketplace, and they're going to see massive disruptions and coverage loss if these tax credits go away. So I think there's a lot of concern in you know, all members of Congress, but I think especially a lot of Republican members, that their constituents are going to experience really massive sticker shock when they start to see what they're going to be asked to pay for coverage. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to drop coverage, and that's going to create a spiral of bad consequences for individuals, for hospitals, healthcare providers, you know, everybody. So I do agree with you that there is a lot of interest from some individual members, Republicans and certainly Democrats, in trying to come to an agreement.
We were talking in the last hour about a New York Times article that cited Republicans who were pointing to the cost of all of these enhanced tax credits and citing that big price tag as a reason to oppose their renewal. But what was missing from there was the comparison, the contrast with what's the cost if suddenly all of those people can't afford their health insurance anymore, either have to pay a lot more and decide to drop it or just are no longer eligible? And I don't know that that's a number you have at your fingertips. But again, I would imagine the cost of extending these tax credits probably pales in comparison to the long range cost of having that many more million Americans go back to being uninsured.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's also worth noting that, you know, this is the only tax credit that didn't get extended, you know. So when you think about what was in the reconciliation bill, which included a lot of extensions of tax credits and then some really drastic cuts, historic cuts to the Medicaid program, and then you see this, it seems like there's a real concerted effort to undermine health insurance coverage in recent policy. And to your point, yes, it costs money to cover people, but it's also very costly when people aren't covered, because you see people neglect symptoms because they are terrified of having medical debt or not knowing what they might be asked to pay if they go into the hospital or clinic and they don't have coverage. So people neglect symptoms until they're much more serious, then they show up in more expensive settings like emergency rooms. And unfortunately, sometimes it's too late for things to be treated. And there've been a lot of great studies of the health benefits of expanding coverage. And unfortunately, we kind of know what's going to happen when you throw that process into reverse, which is something that I think we're really looking at in this country from a multiple set of sources. And then you also see, you know, the consequence on the healthcare system when people lose customers that can come in and pay for preventive care or for elective surgery or for things that improve the quality of their life, but they won't do if they don't have coverage. Then you see some hospitals, especially in rural areas, becoming very financially stressed, maybe having to lay people off, maybe having to eliminate certain specialties. And then that has a spillover effect on the health and access to healthcare for the entire community, especially in rural areas when there may not be a lot of healthcare systems. So you're right, there is a real negative ripple effect when people lose coverage. And it's also not just people's health and not just the healthcare system, but health insurance coverage is a really important form of financial protection. So when people go into debt or people have big medical bills to pay, they stop paying other bills. They may not pay their rent. They may not pay their credit card bills. And so you see a sort of a downward spiral in people's financial well-being too. So it's extremely costly to not cover people.
Catherine Hempstead is with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, helping explain this very important part of keeping affordable in the Affordable Care Act and some of the background on what may lead to a government shutdown fight next year, or next week rather, when Congress is back in session. Catherine, thank you again. It's always great to get background from you. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Pleasure.
All right. Yep. Take care now. All right, some final news and notes from Lake Wissota coming up here. And again, a reminder, tomorrow we'll have some of our regular Thursday guests here. That'll include Joe Zepecki. It'll include Sean O'Malley talking about your money and the markets as well. All that ahead. For more information, of course, you can always head to civicmedia.us. Click shows to learn more. Look for our back issues of shows or subscribe to us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Back in just a bit. You're up, North.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
So now you have some of the background on the potential government shutdown next week. Again, Congress is off all this week. They'll have Monday and Tuesday of next week to figure out something. Otherwise, Tuesday night at midnight, if there's no deal or a continuing resolution to kick the can down the road, there'll be a government shutdown, which is really unfortunate because there are a lot of other things going on right now. Not the least of which you've heard me talk about before is, you know, what's going to happen with a lot of Wisconsin farmers and their crops, especially their soybeans. But anyway, our question of the week is, who does get blamed for a government shutdown if it happens? Is it Republicans in Congress, Democrats in Congress, or President Trump? And if you want to be first to see our question of the week on Sunday mornings, then head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner, and get on board our newsletters. But back to the soybean problem for a bit. I noticed that the national political site Axios is taking note of, shall we say, some nervousness in Iowa, where they have a soybean market of nearly $6 billion a year. And again, not only has China not purchased any soybeans at all from the U.S. this year because of Donald Trump's tariffs and trade war, but this week we learned about a surprise deal with Argentina. China rarely buys anything from Argentina, but now they're going to be getting soybeans from Argentina and Brazil. And at the moment, none from the U.S. Even if Congress and the president wanted to try to buy off farmers with some kind of bailout payments, well, two things. First, it would only add to the debt and the deficit, which they don't seem to have a problem with because they did it during Trump's first term. But second, if there's a shutdown, they can't even get around to doing that because they're busy squabbling about the overall budget itself. They're fighting about the extended healthcare premium supports that we just talked about in our last segment. And so many other things that there are to think about. And yet all we've got going right now is a potential shutdown and a potential trade war. I see that a little bit ago, congressional candidate Rebecca Cook put out a press release urging that Congress and the president exempt soybeans from tariffs in order to protect Wisconsin farmers. She says soybeans represent a $1.3 billion industry in our state. These tariffs are hurting farmers across Wisconsin. The price of a bushel of soybeans has dropped from $15 a bushel 3 years ago to as low as $10 per bushel today. And that is a direct result of tariffs that are driving down demand and the supply chain disruptions that come from it. And Rebecca Cook says, this is an existential crisis for our family farms, our regional economy, and our way of life. It's why I'm calling on President Trump to exempt soybeans from his tariffs and save Wisconsin farmers from further financial pain. There is somebody who has sat on the House Agriculture Committee who could be a leading voice on that, and that would be Derek Van Orden. And yet, as I'm looking to see if there's anything, if you do just a simple search on Derek Van Orden and soybeans, no, no, there's nothing there. There may have been a quote here or there, but in terms of any actual leadership, none whatsoever. And here is somebody who promised to be an independent voice representing the 3rd Congressional District. It's something that we had in Republican Steve Gunderson for many years, especially when it came to dairy prices and fighting for all the dairy farmers in the 3rd Congressional District in Western Wisconsin. It was something that Democrat Ron Kind fought for as well, to represent all of the farms in the 3rd Congressional District. The 3rd Congressional District is used to sending moderates. Steve Gunderson was a moderate Republican, Ron Kind, a moderate Democrat. Derek Van Orden billed himself initially as this kindly grandfather who served in the military and would continue to be that voice for everyone in the 3rd District. And instead, he's in the Washington Post today, but he's in the Washington Post for all the wrong reasons, for trying to cut all federal funding to the city of Eau Claire because of what some people posted on social media, and cut funding to all of the city of Ellsworth because of what somebody put on social media, and funding to the entire Mayo Clinic because of what somebody put on social media. If you missed it earlier, Derek Van Orden actually jumped in our comment sections at Up North News. We put up a post a few days ago about these threats to our First Amendment freedoms that he's been making, and pointing out the harm that that does, and that it doesn't really comport with somebody who should be fighting on the side of freedom of expression. And he jumped in the comment sections to say that not all speech is protected speech, and to cite a particular federal statute as proof of that. But that statute doesn't say what he thinks that it says. And so rather he was just rather rambling and looking for ways to justify making threats against his own constituents and communities in his district. And I, as much as we are flattered that a sitting member of Congress wants to get into our comment section, we really wish he'd get off social media entirely and show some leadership on things like helping farmers whose soybeans are going to go nowhere and the prices that are only going to continue to go down in the meantime. But of course, he's getting into his example from the President of the United States, who we didn't even have time this morning to get into his rambling speech to the United Nations. It was full of false claims and contradictions. And again, he's literally campaigning for a Nobel Peace Prize while he's sending troops into cities within the United States of America. So much to continue talking about. We'll do more tomorrow morning, and of course, more throughout the day here on the Civic Media Radio Network, including your next chance to win in the Go for the Green and Gold Text Win Contest. The next keyword is quite literally minutes away, with Jane and Greg from Matt and Air on Air. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News. We'll see you back here bright and early tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north.
The national news cycle never stops.
but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.